When it becomes clear that you're not going to achieve the goals as you originally stated, how do you adjust? We're going to talk about that next. Hello and welcome to episode number 64 of the Musician Toolkit. I hope everyone is doing well today. My name is David Lane. And it is good to be with you once again. This should be a fairly brief episode today. I just wanted to check in talking about goals. This is something that I find is a topic that interests a lot of musicians. And so I really want to keep coming back to the idea of goals. Because in a nutshell, I mean, that's what this podcast is about. It's for people who have the goal of becoming the best musician that you can possibly be. And as musicians, we have goals on a lot of things, goals of things that we want to accomplish, pieces we want to learn, levels of our career that we want to achieve. Maybe if you're a high school student, there are certain colleges that you would like to successfully be admitted to. Goals are what drive us. Before getting into today's episode, I would like to read a message that was left to me in regard to the previous episode about the intermediate plateau. This message is from Chris. Said, I wanted to leave you a message after your show on the intermediate plateau and wanted to get this off my chest. As a disclaimer, when I self-evaluate my own musicianship, I will always consider myself a beginner. However, when I look back at my own growth, I think I have made significant progress, can play off the cuff for fun, and don't get lost talking about theory. Like many others, I played the guitar in my teens. The instruction was more or less in the form of memorize the song or tap, like so many others. I ended up quitting after a few years. For me, it was because even though I could play songs, I still didn't understand how music was constructed, and that was deeply unsatisfying. I could fake knowing music by playing some repertoire poorly, but I didn't really know what was going on. Fast forward a lifetime, and I find myself bored at the tail end of the pandemic and started teaching myself from scratch all over again, starting with some YouTube videos. All of the points that you brought up in your episode rang true for me. I think for me, understanding music theory and how those ideas and musical moves and tactics map onto my instrument and then being able to access those moves was the most crucial. Daily practice, technique, a teacher, deliberately doing hard things, all of it rings true. I also found that there was an important shift in mindset, where I love practice and the process surrounding self-improvement. I now find that I play to practice and not to perform. Not sure if others feel this way, but I feel like an outlier. Love the show and the talk about more conceptual ideas in music. Keep it coming. Chris, thank you so much for that. I especially love that you know, you've embraced practice as something that you can really get excited about. And I think that is a characteristic of when you've broken that intermediate plateau. So congratulations and keep doing great things with music. So we're on the third month of the year. This is about the time, if it hasn't hit you already, that a lot of your New Year's resolutions or New Year's goals kind of start to shape up and you start to realize what's going well. And what probably isn't going well, and you know, some things might not be going well, but you can rebound, and others, maybe the ship has sailed on actually getting anything done this year. Well, I want to talk about what we can do about all of those goals, but the first thing, I just want to give a brief update on some of the goals that I set on the January 1st episode, talking about goals for musicians that you can do for this year, and I said that I'd be participating, and I'll give just an update on a few of them. So the first thing, and it doesn't surprise me that this is going well because it probably takes the least amount of effort. I'm doing a deep dive on all of the recorded music I can find of John Coltrane, and it's going really well. I've just about finished with his 1959 output. I am going in chronological order. And as far as the landmark albums, like the ones that I knew, these are big deals, these are highly acclaimed. I listened to Blue Train 3 times. I just recently got to Giant Steps, listened to that 3 times. I listened to the album Lush Life. didn't find that album very interesting overall, but the song, the title song, Lush Life, I really liked it. I listened to it a couple of times. Now it's going well. It's not to say it's not without distractions. This will probably give you a snapshot of the type of person that I am. The current audiobook that I'm listening to is called Rock Me on the Water, and it's about 1974 in Los Angeles, and what was going on in the music, television, movie, and even political scene that kind of changed the culture. And it's really a little misleading. It's not like things magically happened that year. It's things that had been happening came to kind of a climax, and things that were going to happen got started. So it's kind of like a little center point. But some of the musicians mentioned in that book are Jackson Browne, the Eagles, Linda Ronstadt, Joni Mitchell. And of those, I think I pretty much explored Jackson Browne and the Eagles. I mean, I know I've explored the Eagles, and I think I've covered all of the Jackson Browne albums that are mentioned. But even though I grew up knowing the name Linda Ronstadt, and I knew some of her biggest singles, I never really checked out her early albums and the albums that are being discussed. Never realized that for the album that kind of came out around the time period discussed in the book, that album featured all of the musicians who eventually formed the band The Eagles. They all met on this tour backing up Linda Ronstadt. And I didn't really know Joni Mitchell at all. I've heard of her, and her album Blue is, you know, on every list of like top 100, top 500 albums of all time, usually ranked pretty highly. And I like to take advantage of having streaming services where you can go from the beginning and not just listen to the famous stuff, but listen to everything. So I started from the beginning. I just listened to the first Joni Mitchell album. I listened to the first two Linda Ronstadt albums. Not too long ago, I watched on Netflix a documentary I highly recommend if you know anything about the situation. It's called The Greatest Night in Pop, and it's about the conception and the production of We Are the World. And it's just utterly fascinating. Well, I really took to Huey Lewis in that documentary, and I started listening to everything he recorded. He only has 10 studio albums so far. I listened to the first three. But that's all to say, John Coltrane is going well. I just find myself getting distracted, but that's fine. The other goal, the goal that I had specific to playing the piano and that I've mentioned, it seems like I don't go more than two or three episodes without bringing it up, but it's the piano sonata of Samuel Barber. And that was going well. It has not been going well lately, and it's been because of my theater performance schedule and just a bunch of other things going on. The Barber is not a piece that I can get anything out of by passively putting it on the music stand and playing for a few minutes. In order for me to really make progress, I have to have a minimum of 30 minutes that I can spend on it. And I just haven't been making that time, but I am going to make that time soon. I'm still determined that that goal is going to stay on target. I had a goal and a challenge of seeing live musicians locally, and, you know, just live performances. Well, we have tickets for the Piedmont Opera presenting Marriage of Figaro, which is a bucket list show for me to see live. Bucket list opera. I have never seen that. And it's always, at least listening to the music, been one of my all-time favorites. And that is at a theater that is exactly a mile from my house. So I'm looking forward to that. And regarding my goal for reading a theory book from start to finish, which includes, for me, the Arnold Schoenberg book, Theory of Harmony, it is still low in the queue for this year. I have not started it. Thought I would be starting it by now. This probably is a book that I will need to read over the course of the second half of the year. And who knows if I will finish it, but I will at least begin this year. So this is one of those, I'm unknown how that's going to go. And then just to throw a goal out there that I think might get changed a little bit. Giving a recital this year. Just the more that I have looked at my actual goals, the goals that matter the most to me, I think that one's probably going to get crowded out. I think I can maybe give a like performances of some type, you know, but they're probably going to be not ones that I choose. They're going to be, you know, related to the paid gigs that I receive. So we'll see. We'll see. There's a lot of time left. And, you know, that's something that it just takes the planning and one time to do for me to fulfill that goal. But it's just one of those that doesn't look as likely, and it's not really feeding my passion as much as I would like. So there are some other goals that we can talk about that I don't feel like prepared to get into, but examples of some things that are going well, some things that still have a chance, and then, you know, maybe one thing that probably is not going to happen. So the title of today's episode is Adjusting Your Goals, Balancing Reality and Ambition. And there are two types of goals that a lot of business coaches recommend. And you will find, you can easily find coaches that highly recommend one over the other. One kind is called SMART goals. SMART stands for specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time measurable or time bound. You can focus on that fourth letter, that or that third letter, the A, for attainable. And we'll just kind of call that a safe goal. So realistic or safe goal is the category of that. The other type of goal is a BAG goal, B-A-G, basically big audacious goal. They're not safe. If you want to think about and I'll call it ambitious goal, but if you want to think about another way that I put this on the podcast before, it's 10X versus 2X goals. So the 2X goals are the ones that it's a little more difficult, but it's not anything revolutionary. It's just something that you're going to have to work towards, but it's not anything that's going to change your life or really make a difference in how you're doing things. And then your 10X goals are the ones that are so out there that you will have to possibly even reinvent how you go about it. You're going to have to, it's not just you've already have the map and you've got to, you know, just trace the route you're going to take. It's like you have to draw the map. You have to come up with the map. Now, there are degrees of those in between. There are maybe some, they're realistic. They're probably 3X, 4X, 5X goals as well as the 10X. It's just kind of a way to keep these separate. So which one should you do? Well, I've heard coaches, different authors specifically say that you should only focus on one or the other, and they've defended each one. And I've heard others that say that you should have a balance, and I kind of think that that is the case. I think a balance of goals is what works well for me. But let's talk about, I won't talk about the cons of each. I'm going to talk about the pros of each, because I think the cons will be self-explanatory when you hear the pros of each. So the pros of your SMART or your ambitious goals is that you are reaching for the stars to hit the moon. In other words, you're going all out there knowing that you might not get it, but you're going to get a lot higher because you're shooting so high. You almost can't help it. It gets you out of a rut because you have to rethink things. You have to rethink how you do things to do something bigger. If you want big success, it requires big goals. And then something I did not put on my notes beforehand, but it just crossed my mind. And you might not think this is a good goal at first, but it is. I mean, it's not, you might not think it's a good characteristic of an ambitious goal, but it is. And that is, you have the chance to fail faster. Nobody wants to fail, but failure is part of any attempt to do something bigger and better. It doesn't mean you always fail, but you sometimes will. And what's worse? Starting something and realizing after a month or two, this is not going to work, and pivoting and doing something else, or doing something for years, only to then realize this is not going to work as well as you thought it might. Okay, the pros of realistic or safe goals. So first of all, life happens. All goals get derailed. If you have smaller, safer goals, you're not having to pivot very much. These goals are also better for your self-esteem. They're more likely to have success. In some cases, they can be achieved faster. Now, the progress is not as obvious, but it's still progress. So I want to give some examples, and I'm going to do some tiers here. I'm going to give you an ambitious goal, a less ambitious goal, a safe goal, and a safer goal regarding one of the things that I'm trying to do, which is trying to learn this Piano Sonata by Samuel Barber. So my ambitious goal is to learn the entire thing this year. I have serious doubts about being able to do that. That's four movements, by the way. And the fourth movement is the hardest by a good margin. So a less ambitious goal is learning the first three movements of the Barber Sonata. Now, this is still an ambitious goal because the first movement, really the first two movements, are going to take a lot of practice. The third movement, I'm not concerned about, but the first two, I am, is going to take a lot of practice. So a safe goal would be learning the first movement this year. Still going to take some work. I'm about maybe one third, really maybe quarter of the way through the first movement. So it's still going to take a lot of work, but it's not going to be the type of goal that will stretch me in any way. It's like I can comfortably manage learning the first movement this year. And a safer goal might be learning half of the first movement this year. I mean, that's really safe because, again, I've learned about a quarter of it. So I just have to do enough work to learn half of it. So here's the thing. The safer goal is no good. If I say my goal is to learn half of the first movement this year, well, by nature, we underachieve. We don't overachieve. We don't say my goal is to achieve half of the first movement this year, but watch me learn the whole thing. The opposite is true. If I say that I want to learn half of the first movement this year, odds are I'm going to probably do a little less than that. On the safe goal, if I say I'm going to learn the first movement this year, then there's a good chance I'm going to learn half of it. Might learn two-thirds of it or three-quarters. So what I think is a good strategy is to have the ambitious goal. Be front and center. Learn the entire thing this year, all four movements. But I also know that life happens. So I have what I would call a minimum standard. And I say that my minimum standard is to learn the first movement this year. But I am, as much as I can manage, going to learn all four movements. Now, given that that's a pretty wide window between maximum and minimum, I have almost guaranteed that I am going to achieve that minimum goal. But because I'm keeping front and center the maximum goal, I'm probably going to get a lot closer. And what's wise to do is to adjust that minimum standard as you make progress. So when I learn that first movement and I see that maybe I've got a few months to go, I now say that my minimum standard is to learn half of the second movement or to learn the second movement in its entirety. So this is why I think you always need to have two goals. And I have read this by another author, so it's not my original idea. It's your bag goal. It's your big audacious goal. But it's also, you have a minimum standard. So I've been doing this for quite a while with my walking goals. I'm one of those, I like to walk 10,000 steps a day. That's my goal. On rainy days like the day I'm recording, where I also have quite a bit of indoor stuff to do, I probably am not going to make that goal. So that's why I have a minimum standard of 5,000 steps. Unless I am sick, I intend to log at least 5,000 steps every day. So far this year, I'm averaging about 9,200 steps. For this month, I'm averaging over 10,000. But every single day, I have walked at least 5,000 steps. Now, what if my goal was 5,000 steps? Well, I've done that before. I've had that in the past year. January of 2023, it was all I could do to average 4,900 steps. There were about half those days that I did not get 5,000. Or there's about a third of the days I didn't even get more than like 3,300. So you have this concept of what I would call the floor and the ceiling. You need to have a comfortably high, but definitely high floor. And it's good to have an almost uncomfortably high ceiling. If I really wanted to average 10,000 steps a day for the whole year, then I should be trying to do 15,000 or 12,000 at the very least. And I should have like a floor of 7,000 or 7,500 steps. So think about floor and ceiling when you are working on your goals. And that is to say, I want to do A, but it's okay if I do B. Be a little challenging with B, be a lot challenging with A. Okay, so now how to balance these goals? You know, so I gave you the idea of a floor and a ceiling. I also want to say, from this point forward, don't call them goals, call them targets. I highly recommend that you check out my episode that I did with Melissa Slocum called Goals, Motivation, and Organization, episode number 59. I'm going to put that link in the show notes if you haven't checked out that episode, but she talks about the very thing. She talks about how life happens, and she talks about how you need to have targets, because sometimes the putting a deadline on what we call a goal can be toxic, because as soon as you realize I'm not going to be able to do this by then, it's human nature to say, why bother at all? So let me offer you just a few more things to consider as you're probably adjusting your goals for 2024. The first thing is to embrace failure. No, really embrace it. Get to where you even like it. Here's a fun little challenge. Let's say that you're a composer and you would like to get published this year. It's easy to make that your goal. I have a different goal for you. Can you get rejected 20 times this year? Can you get rejected 15? This is a fun goal because you know what you have to do to get rejected 20 times? You have to put yourself out there at least 20 times. And you know, if you try to get rejected 20 times, you might accidentally succeed once or twice or three times. You might also get rejected 20 times. That's still ahead of the game. There's so many stories like the author of The Wizard of Oz getting rejected by like 100 publishers or something like that. There are people who are in the triple digits of failure, but they're so far ahead of most people even at that point, because most people, when they count the rejections, when they count the failures, they think before they start counting, I can't do anything. Every time I try something, it ends up failing. And then they realize, you know, I haven't really tried that much. It takes a lot more effort than you think. And you have to think of failure as actually a mark of trying something. It's a sign that you are putting yourself out there. Now, you want to learn from that failure. You want to pivot. It's not just a goal to rack up the totals, but say, actually take pride in achieving that. Hey, I got another rejection. Now, what can I do? What can I try differently to maybe possibly get a different result? The second thing is to embrace discomfort. One of the first books I read this year is called The Comfort Crisis by Michael Easter. I highly recommend it. It's not going to be something I call one of my favorite books. The way it's structured, there's a lot of sections that I think that I could do without as a reader, but the overall point really hits home. As a society in the 21st century, we are addicted to leisure. We are addicted to comfort. But we are a species who thrives in discomfort. Every time you look at a society like England that was being bombarded with bombs in World War II by the Nazis, they have thrived. This country here has done really well in times of war. Now, it's not to say that we should go to war, but you also look at, you know, what came out of the Great Depression. Diamonds are forged under great pressure. Actually, I don't even know if that's true. It's just kind of an expression. But if you want to succeed in anything, you have to stop looking at discomfort as something to avoid and actually something that you need to seek, you need to embrace, because that is where you grow. So as a reminder, don't abandon your big goal, but change it to a target. Think of the idea of a floor and a ceiling. As you're thinking about adjusting your goals, I want to also encourage you to always give yourself grace and always take time to congratulate yourself when you achieve any portion of your goal. I think this is important. You don't have to lament that you haven't made everything you wanted to accomplish yet. I don't think an all or nothing mentality really helps at all. There are stages that you want to get to. There are pages upon pages of this sonata I'm working on. When I'm feeling really good about one page, I am going to celebrate that. Now, it doesn't mean I'm going to go out and, you know, have a fancy dinner, but I'll find a way to celebrate it. Two more suggestions. The first one is to remove your deadlines from your goals. So you might have a goal that you're trying to do this year, but change that date to a target because life happens. Don't make the deadline part of the goal. Just make it a target. And it's okay if that happens later. And then the final thing that I want to recommend is to take breaks as needed, which I am doing with the barber. It's okay if you've got to walk away from the goal for a while, but what's important is that you come back to it. So what I would highly recommend is that you take your calendar app, one that will give you notifications, and when you take time off, and let's just say that you're taking the time off on, just kind of looking ahead a little bit. Let's say you're taking time off on March 10th. Okay. Set a calendar event for April 10th or April 1st or April 15th or something like that that says, now we get back to work. It's like a vacation. It's like you go, if you have a job, maybe you get 2 weeks off. So how do you balance reality with ambition in your goals? What have you found to be successful? You can send me a message at davidlanemusic.com, but I much prefer if you tell me with your own voice. Leave me a voice message at speakpipe.com/musician toolkit. So that is going to wrap up episode number 64. I want to thank you so much for listening and encourage you to please share this episode if you got any value out of it. If you'd be so inclined to leave a 5-star rating, especially on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, I would greatly appreciate it. And please tell your friends about this podcast whenever you can. And I'll be back again next week. Until then, thank you so much for listening.